I'm enjoying the meeting immensely already, getting to know some of you for the first time, getting reacquainted with others, spending time with you, and finding out, especially for someone coming from a small congregation, that there are still places where there are a lot more Christians in one place. And it's really encouraging to me to see that. I'm not saying anything about that to be disparaging of those with whom I work. They're some of the finest people that I've ever run across, and that's one reason why I'm still there. That plus the fact I've told them there are no more preachers available ever in the Brotherhood. And so they just said, well, I guess we'll have to keep you then. And I haven't been there long anyway, just 8 years, just getting underway. Tonight I want to talk with you about a young man. It's good to see these young people up here, but can you imagine any one of them at their age, or maybe a little bit older than that, being suddenly taken away? Not being asked to go anywhere, just taken. Because of the fact that they look to be an exemplary sort of person. And they're taken far away from home. And promised a lot of things that supposedly was going to be for their betterment. Probably didn't have much chance to say goodbye to family. They just took them. Well, that happened. You would think that it would make a nice movie for Hollywood, but to my knowledge, they've never made a movie out of this. But I'm speaking of the Old Testament character of Daniel. Tonight I want to talk to you about Daniel's extraordinary spirit. That particular phrase is found in the 6th chapter of the book of Daniel, in chapter 3. The word extraordinary is interesting, isn't it? Does it mean just a little more of the quality of ordinary? Is it extra amount of ordinary? Well, of course, that's how it's written, extraordinary. Somebody's ordinary, this guy's more of that. But we know that it means really someone that is, or something that is beyond the ordinary. And we apply the word extraordinary to everything from something we eat to superstars. Such as Michael Jordan or Mark McGuire or Sammy Sosa or any number of other sports figures that come to mind. And we use them, hopefully we can, at least from the standpoint of an ideal athlete, something out there that represents maybe what we would like to be. We strive to be above average anyway. I hope that most people do. You remember one thing about being average, and sometimes that's all you can be in a given area. But remember, when you're average, you're just as close to the bottom as you are the top. So just keep that in mind. Now, if that's all you can be in a certain area, then that's all right. Just do the best you can. Daniel had an extraordinary spirit. I came across a quote that I want to share with you. I don't know if you'll be able to see it. Everyone can, but I'm going to read it anyway. And I was impressed with what this man had to say about Daniel as he commented on this. He said, Daniel's irreproachable integrity is little short of incredible in view of his circumstances. He had come to this land against his will as a prisoner of war. He was requested by a pagan despot to study pagan literature and science and be trained to serve in a pagan court surrounded by luxury, sensuality, lust, self-seeking, idolatry, and ruthless cruelty. In the middle of all this, there grew up this fair flower of a character, pure, true, holy, and stainless by the acknowledgement of his enemies, and in which not even accusers could find a fault. There are no circumstances in which a man must have his garments spotted by the world. In fact, unfavorable circumstances are the most favorable for the development of the godly character. Development of godly character comes not by what we draw from the things around, but what we draw from the things from above. And he cites Colossians 3, 1 through 4. Now, I don't know which part of that grabbed your attention the most, but the part that got my attention, I'm going to read it again, that part. There are no circumstances in which a man must have his garments spotted by the world. And that's exactly right. If ever someone could reason in their own mind and perhaps seek to justify to others that they couldn't help it, that the circumstances were so tough and everything was against them, I just couldn't keep myself from sinning, surely someone like Daniel could have done that. Daniel didn't do that. Daniel had an extraordinary spirit. Some have reasoned that he received that in some supernatural way, perhaps similar to some spiritual gift or something. I don't see any reason to look upon that phrase that way. And you got to remember now that as Daniel is writing this, he's probably around 80 years old. He was taken into that captivity as a young man, maybe a teenager even, late teens. Now he's about 80 years old as this part of his life is unfolding. I suggest to you that the reason it says here that he was an extraordinary and had an extraordinary spirit is that he worked at it all of his life. He wanted to have an extraordinary spirit, and he achieved it. And any one of us can as well. We can be as Daniel was. First thing I want us to notice is that his enemies testified to this very fact. Now, they weren't trying to make him look real good, but the fact of the matter is, they couldn't do otherwise. Now, Daniel was a faithful commissioner. There were three of them. Daniel was one of them. There were 120 called satraps underneath these commissioners. They were accountable to the commissioners. Their job was to make sure that the king suffered no loss of revenue and other things. So it was an important position. And verse 3 says that Daniel began distinguishing himself among the commissioners and satraps because he possessed this extraordinary spirit. And the king planned to appoint him over the entire kingdom. Joseph and Daniel were similar in this respect. They were in difficult circumstances, but by the providence of God, rose to prominent positions. Daniel's about to be promoted above these other two. He's already really above the rest of them. Well, you know, these other commissioners are not too happy about that. But I'm not surprised that Daniel was in that position. You go back in the first chapter and you remember what it says back there in verse 8 about Daniel. As they contemplated taking him into captivity and they got him there and began to lay forth before him their plans for him. They were going to provide him with the very best of food, very best education that they could give him out of all the wisdom that they had. But it says in verse 8 that Daniel made up his mind that he would not defile himself with the king's choice food or with the wine which he drank. So he sought permission from the commander of the officials that he might not defile himself. He purposed in his heart, the King James says, not to defile himself. This text says he made up his mind. Daniel determined from the get-go, as he faced captivity in Babylon, that he would not allow himself to be corrupted by what they had to offer. Now, to me, that takes an extraordinary amount of conviction for someone that young at that time to make that determination, but it also shows it's possible. Now, young people, when you're faced with all kinds of temptation at school, and I know that you are, I went through it years ago, and I've got two teenage sons, one of them still in high school, and he comes home and tells me what they're wanting him to do, participate in. I know it's tough out there, but do not ever think that it is tough to the extent that you have an excuse for yielding. You do not. There is, as that quote says, no circumstances under which a man must have, can have his garments spotted by the world. There just isn't any excuse for doing that which is wrong. But it requires that we do as Daniel did and purpose in our heart not to defile ourselves. So you see, it follows that Daniel then, having made that up in his mind early on, was faithful in every area of his life and even that of serving this pagan king. I maintain that Christians, faithful Christians, maybe I'll qualify that, will be the very best or among the very best employees that any company will ever have. A truly faithful Christian will make sure that he or she is giving that company everything they have a right to expect of them. Now, if that's not true, I'd like someone to show me why. Now, what that means is that if it comes down to just a matter of who's the best worker, we're going to get rid of one, we're going to keep one. And if that's the only criteria, then the Christian doesn't have anything to worry about. Now, I know there are other factors that enter in, so that doesn't always guarantee a Christian a job. But if they're going to evaluate and weigh very heavily the kind of job that person does, then the Christian may have a leg up on anybody else around there, or should have. Paul, in the third chapter of Colossians, says in verse 23, and if you think about the audience Paul originally sent this to, many of them may have been slaves, as far down on the rung as you can get on the ladder. He says in verse 23, whatever you do, do your work heartily, as for the Lord rather than for men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of the inheritance. It is the Lord Christ whom you serve. Someone says, you know, I get tired of going to work, and I don't like these people there, and I think I'll just not do the job that I could do. I'm just going to slack off a little bit. Oh, no, that's not right. Paul would say to you, that's not right. It's the Lord Christ whom you serve. Oh, it's true, you have an employer somewhere, but you're really serving the Lord and reflecting upon the Lord by the kind of job you do every day when you go to work. So Daniel was faithful in every one of his duties. Now, they used this faithfulness against him, as we go back now to the sixth chapter of Daniel. They've got to do something to derail this appointment, because here is a man, they can't find anything against his character. He has impeccable character. They probably thought about that. Well, what can we get this guy on? What can we accuse him of? Is there any kind of corruption over there in his department? There wasn't any. And you know, lately I'm getting tired of hearing justification for crooked politicians, be they Democrat or Republican. I don't care which side of the aisle. I'm tired of hearing my fellow citizens say, well, they all lie, or they're all this, or they're all that. I don't believe that. We've got some that are trying to do a good job. I don't believe everybody's crooked. Why can't we find some good, honest people in public office today? Daniel was in a public office, and he was honest. They tried their best to find something on him, and they couldn't. Well, what are they going to do? Well, they got an idea. And their plan was to go to the king, have him issue a decree that really was an injunction against any prayer to anyone unless it was to the king. Because they knew the kind of character that Daniel had. They knew what kind of man Daniel was. They knew what his practice was. They knew that Daniel prayed to God three times a day. And he didn't try to hide the fact that he prayed three times a day. And so they laid the trap out. They went to the king and had it all set up. I might just stop right here and ask, are we dedicated and faithful enough in our life as a child of God, and are our pattern of lives consistent to the degree that someone could use our faithfulness against us? For example, if there were someone going through your neighborhood and settling on someone's house to break in and burglarize, would they be able to observe that without fail, Sunday morning, Sunday night, and Wednesday night, you always leave at about the same time to go to services? And therefore, they could use your faithfulness against you, wait till you leave, and break into your home. You know, not every Christian could say that. Because some Christians deliberately stay at home and watch a ball game or go fishing or do something other than worship the Lord. Daniel was of such a character that you never find him that way. They used his faithfulness against him. See, he'd already planned on how to deal with that situation. No, he didn't know specifically that someday these men were going to plot against him. But Daniel had purposed in his heart not to defile himself. Daniel had the determination the apostles had. You remember in Acts chapter 5, verse 29. In chapter 4, they threatened them and let them go. In chapter 5, they're still preaching. So this time, they call them in again. They beat them. And again, they warn them, do not go around and preach anymore. And the answer that the apostles gave basically was, you fellows do what you have to. We're going to do what we have to do. We ought to obey God rather than man. Why, we cannot help but speak these things. Yeah, they made up their mind like Daniel did. It's not that they anticipated every incident of persecution, but they made up their mind what they're going to do if it came. And Daniel had made up his mind that if any law like that were ever passed, I'm still going to keep praying. He didn't care. Let them do what they want. And there was a fairly severe penalty involved in this, unless being in a lion's den was somebody's day average idea of having a picnic, and it wouldn't have been. And so, they knew of Daniel's faithfulness. How'd they know that? Well, because he was consistent. He prayed regularly. Chapter 6, verse 10, it goes on to say that Daniel knew that this document was signed. He knew it was law. And the law of the Medes was that once such a decree was issued, the king couldn't take it back. These men knew that. And that's the way it was. He entered his house. Now in his roof chamber, he had windows open toward Jerusalem. And he continued kneeling on his knees 3 times a day, praying and giving thanks before his God, as he had been doing previously. He prayed to God. He recognized the power of prayer in his life. 1 Thessalonians 5:17, pray without ceasing. Philippians chapter 4 and verse 5, be anxious for nothing, but in everything with prayer and thanksgiving, let your requests be made known unto God. The Lord is near, that verse starts out by saying. Be anxious for nothing. The Lord is as near as prayer. Don't worry about anything. Just keep praying to God. Daniel did that. They came by to verify that Daniel was violating the law. I mean, they knew they could find him up there praying. And sure enough, they did. They came by agreement, verse 11, and found Daniel making petition and supplication before his God. Now, they exaggerated the position. When they went back to the king, they pulled a little exaggeration. Read that here in verse 12. They go in and butter the king up again and said, did you not sign an injunction that any man who makes a petition to any god or man beside you, O king, for 30 days would be cast in the lion's den? Well, of course he did. He knew that. They just wanted him to make sure. We're all on the same page here, right, king? Yeah. The statement is true according to the law of the Medes and Persians. It may not be revoked. Yes, yeah, the king knew that too. Then they answered and spoke before the king, Daniel, one of those exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, O king, or to the injunction which you signed, but keeps making his petition 3 times a day. They made it appear as if Daniel was just a complete out-and-out rebel that never did pay much attention to the king, but that wasn't so. Daniel was faithful in his service to the king, except he drew a line here, because this was an injunction against that which he had to do in order to be pleasing to God. Oh, it was predictable. And now the king is in a tight spot. He was distressed over this, it says in verse 14, and set his mind on delivering Daniel. And even until sunset, he kept exerting himself to rescue him. King may be weakening, and so these other men, they come to him and they remind him once again of the law and the penalty. And so the king, being weak, sort of like Pilate was in the New Testament, he played the role of Pilate. He was weak, he gave in to the pressure, and they threw Daniel in the lion's den. Well, you know pretty much the rest of that story. God delivered him out of the mouth of the lions. He saved his loyal servant. Darius, in fact, predicted that. In verse 16, he said, your God, whom you constantly serve, will himself deliver you. And indeed, God cares for his own. I will never leave you nor forsake you, God says. And in fact, we know about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego being delivered from the fiery furnace in chapter 3. That's the way God is, folks. If we will trust in God, he will be with us always. Daniel had an extraordinary spirit. That's what I want to talk about now. And I say to you that not only did Daniel have an extraordinary spirit, but you and I can have one too. But it must be that we allow the flesh to control the spirit. Daniel's spirit dominated his flesh. The fleshly part of Daniel in chapter 1 may have been enticed by the various things that they had to offer, which would not have been lawful for Daniel to eat. And so while the flesh may have longed for that, the spirit of Daniel said, no, not going to do that. Not going to eat that, not going to drink that. Don't need it. Give me bread and water, and I'll just show you that I don't have to have all that, and I'll be stronger anyway. And of course, he was. We are, in fact, to be ruled by the Spirit. In the 8th chapter of Romans, in verse 4 beginning, at the end of it, it says that we walk according, that we do not walk according to the flesh, but according to the Spirit. For those who are according to the flesh set their minds on the things of the flesh, but those who are according to the Spirit, the things of the Spirit. For the mind set on the flesh is death, but the mind set on the Spirit is life and peace. Tonight, are you being led by the Spirit, or are you being dominated by your flesh? Back in the 6th chapter, and verse 6, we found out that we are to take this old man of sin. Everyone that is a Christian should have already done this. Paul says, knowing this, that our old self was crucified with him, that our body of sin might be done away with, that we should no longer be slaves to sin. When the Christian comes up out of the waters of baptism, the old man of sin is to be left behind. To arise, to walk in newness of life, to allow himself or herself to be controlled by the Spirit, not the flesh anymore. That's the past life. But you know, we have trouble with the flesh. I'm convinced that part of the reason we have trouble is we never really put to death the old man of sin. Paul said in Galatians 2nd chapter verse 20, he says, I've been crucified with Christ, and it's no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and delivered himself up for me. Christ was living in Paul. That's what Paul said. And I'm not really living. Christ is living in me. I've been crucified with him. That old man of sin in Paul's life was behind him. He was now living for Christ. And people could see Christ in him. But I'll tell you what we do sometimes. The reason we struggle with some of the same old sins we did before we became a Christian is we've got that old man of sin on a life support system. You know what life support systems are, I'm sure. They're very effective in the hospitals to some extent, keeping people alive. Now, you may argue that sometimes they shouldn't. That'd be a totally different discussion. But they are used to help keep that person alive to at least temporarily do some things for them they cannot do for themselves. A life support system. And it enables them to go on living. And it's successful with some and not successful with others. Well, you know, some people do that with the old man of sin. They hook him up to a life support system. And you say, well, what do you mean by that? Well, they get in front of the television set and watch things they shouldn't watch. They feed the old man of sin, the fleshly part of us that cries out to be tempted to do that which is wrong. Now, we can do two things with that. We can either not feed that desire and turn the channel, or we can continue to watch it and feed the old man of sin and begin to think things we ought not think. We keep the old man of sin alive. Some Christians will keep the old man of sin alive by standing around at work and joining in with the rest of them and listening to and telling filthy stories. And then they go home and wonder, you know, I can't seem to put that behind me. Well, quit hanging around with those people. That's keeping the old man of sin on a life support system. Watch what you read. Watch the people you run around with. Spend time with. All the world we're doing is keeping that old man of sin alive, and we're going to have trouble as long as we do that. Daniel had an extraordinary spirit because he didn't allow the flesh to dominate over his spirit. And some people feed that old man of sin by going down to the swimming pool in the summertime and just jumping in the water and having a good time with other people who ought to be concerned they don't have enough clothes on. When we lived in Richmond, my oldest son at that time was about, two or three, and we were out at the mall there one day, and we looked over there at him, and he's sitting there, and this is summertime, and he's sitting there shivering. We thought, what's the matter with him? It was hot out. And he finally pointed to some people. They didn't have enough clothes on. And he knew that when he didn't have all his clothes on, he got cold. And he was trying to indicate to us that, what's going on here with these people? Well, that's a good question. They were worldly people, and so they probably didn't see anything wrong with undressing that way. But, it's a shame when Christians do the same thing. When you can't tell the difference between Christians and non-Christians by the way they dress, there's something wrong. Now, it's wrong for everybody dressing modestly, but it is 10 times worse or 100 times worse when those who profess to be children of God don't know how to dress modestly either. And what they're doing is feeding the old man of sin. And this business of people saying, oh, that doesn't have any effect on me, baloney. Not true. If immodest apparel doesn't affect the thinking of young men or even not so young men, then somebody needs to go to all these advertisers and tell them they missed the boat. You advertisers that are putting these scantily clad women on these commercials, what are you doing that for? Why, nobody pays any attention to that. Don't even bother anybody. Sure. You see, we've got to make sure we're not feeding the old man of sin. We can have an extraordinary spirit. Daniel had one. Another thing about Daniel and having this extraordinary spirit is he had a purpose in life. We got a lot of people in our society, and they're not all young people either. They never quite find out why they're on the earth. They're always out there searching for something. I know of a man at age 62. He at one time had been a faithful gospel preacher. He announces to his family, he's about 62 at the time, that he was leaving where he lived and he was going to California to find himself. What does that mean, find yourself? You don't have to look too far, and of all people, he didn't have to go to California to find himself. Just open up the Bible if you want to find yourself, because it sets forth for us why we're here on the earth. Ecclesiastes 12 and verse 13, let's hear the conclusion of the whole matter. What's the bottom line? Why are we here? Fear God and keep his commandments. That's our job. That's why we're here on the earth, to bring glory and honor to God through obedience to God. We don't need to go to California to find ourselves. Just sit down and open the Bible, and you can find yourself and save all that money you'd spend on travel costs and everything. Don't go to California to find yourself. That was a sad case. He ended up having a massive heart attack and died outside of his faithful relationship to God. A wasted life. There is purpose in our life if we'll let God rule in our life, and we can have an extraordinary spirit. And another thing, we've got to be busy trying to change the world, not allowing it to change us. Paul said in Romans 12 and verse 2, be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Too many of us allow the world to change us. Well, we set out with good intentions. We're not going to allow that to happen, but we're not strong enough, and pretty soon we're just like the world. We dress like them. We talk like them. We frequent all the places they frequent. And we are the ones that are food. Jesus says, ye are the salt of the earth. He said further in that context, you're the light of the world. We're supposed to be here to make a difference. Yes, our manner of dress should be different. I had a Christian one time, in the context of a discussion we were having over worldliness. He amazed me. He said, well, sounds to me like you think God expects more out of Christians in these areas. I said, yeah, I think he does. From the standpoint that the people out in the world don't claim to be following God anyway. But we who say we are a child of God, we're claiming something and we're not living up to it if we participate in all these things that the world does. I don't know why he would even make such a statement. He ought to know better than that. Remember the statement I put on the overhead there. We're not to draw from the world around us. You don't develop godly character by drawing from those people that are around you in the world. You develop godly character by drawing from the things that are above. And of course, that's taken from Colossians, the 3rd chapter. If you then be risen with Christ, seek those things that are above, where Christ is at the right hand of God. Set your mind on the things above, not on things that are on the earth, for you have died and your life is hidden with Christ in God. Set your affections. Be mindful of things that are above. Prize very highly and value spiritual things. Don't value the things of this world so much. Because after all, we've been raised up with Christ. That's what Paul said. We can have godly character and we can have an extraordinary spirit. But we got to dedicate ourselves to being an agent of change in the world. Trying to change those that are around us for better. Being salt, influencing them. That's what salt's for. It's supposed to influence. If it loses its ability to influence, what did Jesus say? It's only good to be cast out and trampled under the foot of men. I'll tell you what we need to do is we need to rethink who is extraordinary. Is Michael Jordan extraordinary? Oh, yeah, in terms of his ability to play basketball. Or Ryan Sandberg. Some of the others I mentioned earlier in the lesson that are on the minds of a lot of people right now. And I don't know too much about their character. These people, though, come to mind if we think about athletics and their ability. And they are extraordinary. But not a one of them holds a candle to Daniel. Because, you see, unless before Michael Jordan leaves this old world, he obeys the gospel. Unless he does that, then he has totally wasted his life. Now, you think about that. You say, well, what about his achievement out on the basketball floor? That won't matter at all. When he stands before God on the day of judgment, it won't make a bit of difference that Michael Jordan was a superstar in basketball. That will not even be a part of the equation. And the same thing for all these other people that I mentioned. Do they have an extraordinary spirit like Daniel? No. Unless Michael Jordan ever obeys the gospel, he's wasted his life. Unless Mark McGwire, as great a home run hitter he is in San Francisco, unless they obey the gospel, they've wasted their life. And they'll stand before God and hear the sentence of doom passed upon them. And it won't make a bit of difference then how talented they were. I can think of some extraordinary people that I've known. There was a lady that worshiped with us in Joliet. Her husband was an alcoholic, had no interest whatsoever in spiritual things, didn't care. And worse than that, he frustrated her efforts to be godly. And there were times when she would be preparing herself to go to services and he'd be drunk and he'd pull out a handgun and he'd point it at her in his drunken state and he would say, you're not going to services tonight, you're staying home. What would you do? I put you to the test. Well, I've never had to be tested like that. Had godly parents, grew up in a good home. He said, you're not going. Yes, I am. Pull the trigger if you want to, but I'm going to serve and walk on out the door. Well, he never shot her, and he hasn't to this day. And imagine what kind of pressure that puts her under. But I'm telling you something. Now, she has an extraordinary spirit, that woman does. I'll tell you something else about her. Almost every time I preached a lesson on the husband and wife relationship, and the duties and responsibilities of each one. But when I talk to the women about their responsibility before God to be in subjection to their husband, she would be one of them at the door sometimes with tears in her eyes saying, I needed that sermon. I haven't been in subjection lately as much as I should be. You know, you have a tendency immediately to say, well, you don't have to be in subjection to that creep anyway. But you know, that exception is not in the scriptures. So you can't say that. And I knew there were others there who, on the surface, what I could see anyway, didn't appear to be in subjection too much, but sermons like that didn't seem to bother them, went right on over. She took it to heart because she had an extraordinary spirit, and I'm persuaded you probably know some people like that too. People put in tough circumstances, and they do the right thing. That's another thing I'm tired of hearing about. The older I get, the more tired of it I get in hearing it. That they can't do what's right because of their background, whatever it is, and they cite how they were abused as a child or a number of other things. Friends, that doesn't have anything to do with doing what's right. For every one of those people who go out and murder a dozen citizens somewhere because they had a deprived childhood, there's more than that that came up in the same neighborhood, maybe lived next door, that grew up to be model citizens. So they don't have anything to do with it. It's the choices that people make in life, not their circumstances, that determine whether they do what's right. Daniel had an extraordinary spirit. Do you? Tonight, do you have an extraordinary spirit? Are you able to, or have you even tried yet to put the old man of sin behind you, been buried in baptism for remission of sins? Have you done that? Are you trying to let the spirit dominate the flesh in your life? You need to. Trying to be the salt of the earth and the light of the world? You need to. Have you figured out your purpose in life yet? To faithfully serve God? Yeah, you'll be something else along the way too. You'll have a profession, an occupation of some kind. That's necessary. The real purpose of your life is to serve God. Determined to be extraordinary because you can be just what Daniel was. You're here tonight and you are subject to the invitation of heaven. We give you this opportunity now while we stand and we sing together.